We're looking on Chaf Beis, Amud Beis, the last line, Tashma. And the Gemara is vacillating on the issue of what exactly is the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. Is it the Hadlaka or is it the Hanocha? Is it the actual lighting? Well, the lighting is irrelevant. It's just a matter of placing the Ner Chanukah in the right place. Tashma. Let's see if we could make a determination based on a statement of Rava. Diomar Rava, hidlika bifnim v'otzia l'chutz. We're talking about a case where he lit it in the wrong place, and then he puts it down in the right place. And Rava says he has not fulfilled his mitzvah. Iyamrit bishlema hadlaka osa mitzvah. If I take the position that the mitzvah is the kindling of the light, then I understand that hadlaka bimkomo beino. We need to light it in its proper place, and he didn't light it in the proper place. Mishum hachilo asa klum. Therefore, he has not fulfilled his mitzvah. Ela iyamrit hanocha osa mitzvah. But if you're going to tell me just placing it down, that's the mitzvah. Amai lo asa. Why is this lo asa v'lo klum? Why is this an invalid mitzvah? Okay, he lit it in the wrong place. It's lit now. He put it down in the right place. And the Gemara thinks this is clearly a proof that hadlaka osa mitzvah, that we need the mais hadlaka in the right place. And if at the moment of the actual kindling it was not a mitzvah, then it doesn't become a mitzvah later when he places it down in the right place. And the Gemara rejects this proof. The Gemara says, hasam nami, the same way we rejected other proofs, now we could reject this proof as well. Hara omel etzarko hu di adlaka. The reason why this case is invalid is because he lit in a place where it seems quite clear that he's doing it for his own purposes. Like, for example, he lit it in a place where his family is going to enjoy the benefit of the light. Toshma diomar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Here's where we begin our daf for today, Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. Ashishis. Ashishis is a large bowl which is filled with oil. They put wicks into the bowl and it could last for a very, very long time. Shahaisa dolekes v'oleches kolayom kulo. And this is a case in which he lit the candles on Erev Shabbos and they lasted throughout the entire Shabbos, even into Motzei Shabbos. And the Brisa says the following. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says the following. L'motzai Shabbos, mechabe umadlika. After Shabbos, he has to extinguish the candle and relight it. Iyamet bishlamad lokos a mitzvah shapir. I can understand it very well. If you maintain that lokos a mitzvah. So that lok of yesterday is not going to be meaningful for this mitzvah that I have tonight. Every night is a separate independent mitzvah. So therefore he has to put it out in order to rekindle it. Mitzvah. If you're going to say the mitzvah is not the lighting, but rather placing it in the right place. I don't understand the language here of Rabbi Yeshua. Why does he say you have to put it out in order to rekindle it? He should have said something totally different. He should have said, Mechaba, he should put it out. Magbia, he should lift it. Umeinicha, and then he should put it down. Umadlika, and then he should rekindle it. Miboile means that's what he should have said. If I hold Hanochos a mitzvah, then the main chiyuv here is every night I have to do a Hanocha. So yesterday, on Erev Shabbos, before Shabbos, I did a Hanocha. That Hanocha is not going to be valid for tonight. Motzei Shabbos, it's a new night of Chanukah, a brand new chiyuv. I need a new maisa of Hanocha, and in order to do so, I have to lift it up from its place, so that I now completely undermine yesterday's Hanocha. I have a clean slate, and now, Meinicha, now I put it down, and I light it. That's what Rav Yeshua should have said, and that's one proof. from Rabbi Yoshua that he holds that hadlochos a mitzvah, meaning he doesn't have to do a new anocha. All he has to do is a new hadlocha for this night. So he blows out the candle from yesterday and rekindles it tonight. V'yodin, furthermore, midikom of archinon. Let's bring another proof from the nusach habracha, the formula of the bracha, shekinshonu tosav tzivanu, lahadlik ner shal Chanukah. Shmamino hadlokos a mitzvah, shmamino. If you would say that the mitzvah is hanocha, then we should have said, asher kitshonu mitzvosu tzivonu, laniach ner Chanukah. But it doesn't say that. It says, lahadlik ner Chanukah. And this is the final proof for the Gemara, that the mitzvah is hadloka. So far, we have the following nafgemina. Now that we know hadlokos a mitzvah, the din would be that if you lit yesterday, that hadlok of yesterday could not be valid for today, and you'd have to extinguish the candle and do a new hadlaka. Number two, if let's say you lit the candle in the wrong place, even if you were to pick it up and put it down in the right place, you would not be yotze, because the original hadlaka was in the wrong makom, and therefore was an invalid hadlaka. You'd have to again put it out and rekindle it. And it's not enough that you do a hanocha in the right place. Now the Gemara adds a third nafkamina. Vahashta the amrina nadlokos a mitzvah. Now that you've come to the conclusion that the mitzvah's nadloka is therefore idlika chere shota vekaton lo osa velo klum. We need what's called a bar chiyuva, someone who's obligated in the mitzvah. He and only he could light the ner Chanukah, and that hadloka could be a hadloka. But if the one who was madlik was a lav bar chiyuva, and we have here the following category called cheresh shota v'katan. Very quickly, cheresh is what's called a deaf mute. If he's just deaf, but he's able to speak, he's considered pikeach l'chol dover. He has the same status as anyone else. But he has a deaf mute. He doesn't have neither the possibility of hearing nor the possibility of speaking. Shota is a person who manifests various, very erratic behavior, and he's considered not to be working, as we would say colloquially, with a full deck and a katan. Lo asa velo klum. Now, I have to tell you on the side here that the word katan here is a very complex word in this context. Because although the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchas Megillah says that a katan who read the Megillah could not be motzi a gadol, but nevertheless in Hilchas Chanukah, he actually brings down two opinions. And according to one opinion in the Shulchan Aruch, if the katan is already higia l'chinuch, let's imagine he's 9 years old, and he's a bar chinuch, so since he has the mitzvah of chinuch, therefore his hadlaka is a meaningful hadlaka. And therefore this Gemara that we're studying now that excludes the hadlaka of a katan is specifically discussing a katan, according to that opinion, who is less than 9 years old.
Excuse me, where exactly are you on the daf?
Well, we started just now the daf on Chaf Gimel is today's daf.
Thank you.
Okay then, so Omer Av Sheshes, we're approximately maybe 10 lines down into the daf. I mean, we just started a few minutes ago, so if you joined us, please join.
Very good.
Isha, now what about a woman's hadlaka? Well, is she a bar chiyuva? And the answer is, l'chora not. It's a mitzvah seishas man grova. The Gemara says, vadi madlika. She can certainly light on behalf of a man. And that's the way the Rambam learns it. Other Rishonim say that she can light on behalf of herself, or behalf of another woman. There are many, many different shittos here about the hadlaka of a woman in their Chanukah. But the underlying principle here is that she is a bar chiyuva. The Omer Rabbi Shur ben Levi, Noshim chayovas b'ner Chanukah. Women are obligated to the mitzvah ner Chanukah, despite the fact that it's a time-bound mitzvah. And the reason for that is called Sha'af hein hayu bi'oso hanes. They are included in the miracle. And here I'll quickly mention two great controversies about this five-word phrase. One controversy revolves around Rashi and the Rashbam, whether or not afhein hayu bosanes means they were included in the gzera, meaning when the Yevonim tried to persecute the Jewish people. The women were no less included than the men. Other Rishonim say no. Afen hoy bosanes means they actually brought about the miracle. Yehudis at the time of Hanukkah. Now, keep in mind that this principle, Afen hoy bosanes, appears in two other contexts. One, with regard to Purim, women are obligated to the mitzvah Megillah, and the other with regard to Dalet Kosos on Leil Pesach, and once again, Afen hoy bosanes. In the case of Esther, if you go with those Rishonim that the women were responsible for bringing about the miracle, clearly that applies to Esther. In the case of Dalet Kosos, the Gemara says, and the Medrash, Bezchus Noshim Tzidkonios Nigalu Avosenu B'Mitzrayim. So the women played, according to that Shita, a major role in bringing about the miracle. Now we have another Machlokas. What is Afen Hoyubosanes? Is that a new Chiyuv, or that's the old Chiyuv? Are the women brought back to the original Chiyuv? They have the identical Chiyuv as a man, or no? The man has the Iker Chiyuv because even though it's a Zman Groma, he's obligated. A woman, though, as a Zman Groma, is not obligated. So she doesn't have that main Chiyuv. She has another Chiyuv, which is called Afen Choyu Bosades. And this is a famous sheet of the Bahag, the Baal Halachas Gedolos, that a woman and a man have two different obligations in Ner Chanukah, two different obligations in Megillah. For example, in the case of Megillah, the Bahag says the women have to hear the Megillah, whereas a man not only has to hear the Megillah, he has to read the Megillah. And in Ner Chanukah, a woman has to participate in the Ner itself, meaning she has to be there at the time that the Ner is lit. But the actual Adlaka, that's a chiyuv on a man because he's obligated in a time-bound mitzvah. Omrav Sheshe Sachsenoi Chayav B'Ner Chanukah. A guest at someone's home is obligated in Ner Chanukah. And the Ran points out that this is a Pella, unbelievable Gemara. What do you mean an Achsenoi is Chayav? Achsenoi is obligated in all mitzvahs. Why do I need Rav Sheshes to tell me, a big Chiddush he discovered in America, that a guest is obligated in the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah? So the Ran answers, because we have something called a Chovas Bias. We had a brisa back on Daf Chof Aleph that the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is Ner Ish U Beso, and it's a chiv on the bias. And we would think that Achsenoi, insofar as he's just a guest in the house, he's not what you call a Baal HaBayis, he's not a member of the household, he would be exempt, Kamash Balon. And here you have to understand what the Kamash Balon is, but perhaps the Kamash Balon is that in this case, since he's eating in that house, he becomes one of the Bnei HaBayis, and he's included in the Chiyuv of Ner Ishu Beso. And Omer Abzera makes a comment, a very important halachic comment. He says, Meiresh, initially back in my youth, when I was a bacher, ki avina beirav, when I was a guest in my Rebbe's house, mishtatifna bepriti bahadi ushpiza. Ushpiza is the host, and I would chip in to participate and become what's called a partner, a shutaf, in the ner, in the oil of the ner. And Bosad the Nesivi, after I got married, Issa, I married a woman, Amina, I said, Hashta vadai lo tzrichna, even if I'm not home, I don't have to chip in with the balabayas, the ushpiza, but rather, the komadlik alai bego besai, she, my wife, will light for me in the house. Now this again seems to indicate that Ner Chanukah is a unique kind of mitzvah. It's not what we call a chovas haguf. It's not an obligation on the body that wherever you are on the face of the earth you have to make sure that you have a bias to be madlik. But rather it's a chovas bias, that your bias should have a ner doluk in the bias. And if your wife is in charge of making sure that there's a ner doluk in the bias, then you fulfill your mitzvah. Now, this story about Reb Zeira is very important, halacha, because it teaches us that in a case where a man is a guest, let's say, for example, he and his wife are both guests in someone's house, or alternatively, he's a single man, and he doesn't have a wife who's lighting for him in his bayis, then in such a case, he has to be mishtatev biprite. He has to chip in and buy himself ownership in the ner. The minimum amount of mamon, the shear of mamon, is a pruta. Therefore, if he gives less than a pruta, he doesn't have partnership in the ner. And the Ramban and other Rishonim have a long discussion here about what does partnership in the ner have to do with the idea of an achsenoi. But in any event, whatever the mechanics is, somehow, magically, you become one of the bnei abayis, because A, you're a guest, and B, because you're a partner in the ner itself. Although you can fulfill your mitzvah of Ner Chanukah with any material, any type of oil, but nevertheless, Shemen Zayis Min HaMuvchar. Now, a lot of people misunderstand this. They think that the preference for oil of a Zayis, which means olive oil, is because the original miracle took place in olive oil. That may be true, and the Maharal Miprag certainly makes a big deal about that, but that's not what this Gemara is about. This Gemara is about the fact that olive oil catches the fire very well, and there's a beautiful flame. Omar Abai says that before he heard this statement of Rabbi Shuben Levi Mireish, Hava Mahader Mar Amishcha Deshumshame, my favorite choice, and he speaks about Mar, meaning his Rebbe Rabba, would be sesame oil. And apparently sesame oil also has some very outstanding propensities. It draws the oil very slowly, and the fire could last for a long time. But, oh yeah, and he tells you exactly why he preferred sesame oil. He says, Omar, Hai Moshach Nahorit Fei, somehow the light will continue for a long time. In other words, the consumption of this very thick oil, which is called sesame oil, is a very slow consumption. But came into Shomel Lahod Rav Yeshua ben Levi, once we knew that the halacha prefers, if all things are equal, a Shemen Zayis situation, then Mahadar Amishcha DeZesa, and he's talking about his Rebbe Rabba, he would run around trying to get himself some olive oil. Omar, and he declared, again, you would have expected he would declare, well, the miracle itself took place with olive oil. No. Hi, this oil that comes from the olives, tzolil means it's got a certain clarity to it. Nahore, it's light. Tfe, more. So although the olive oil will be consumed at a faster pace, but nevertheless, the quality of the light is superior. V'yom Rabbi Yishu ben Levi, kol ha-shmonim yofim lidyo. Now we have a discussion about writing a Sefer Torah, or tefillin, or mezuzahs, and we want to get the right ink, and when you prepare ink, in the manufacturing process of ink, you need an admixture of oil, together with certain kinds of soil. And the best oil for that job, says Rabbi Yishu ben Levi, is Shemen Zayis Min HaMuvchar. Olive oil is your first choice. And now the Gemara vacillates back and forth exactly why Rabbi Yishu ben Levi thought that the oil of a Zayis is superior oil. Legabel Ola Ashen. In the process of manufacturing ink, there are two processes. One comes first and the other comes later. One is called legabel, which we've seen this word in the past. It means to knead, with a K at the beginning, to knead. And what you do is you knead this kind of earthy substance together with oil. And here, in this context, according to this side in the Gemara, Rabbi Shimon Levi prefers that you use olive oil. And then there's a later process after the Giba, which is called Li'ashen. And what they did is they put this concoction under the fire, and on top of it they would put a piece of glass. And what would happen is there would be a blackening on the outside of the glass. They would scrape off that blackening, and that would give a certain propensity to the ink itself. At what point in the process is Shemen Zayis Min HaMuvchar, is it preferable? Toshma, come and listen to Tani Rabbi Shmuel Bar Zutri. We have a statement that is taught by Rabbi Shmuel that Kol Hashmonim Yofin Lidyo V'Shemen Zayis Min HaMuvchar Bein LeGavel U'Bein LeAshen. At both stages in the process of preparing ink, Shemen Zayis is your first choice. Now we have a different Amora who has a version of the Brisa in the same tradition of Rab Shmuel Bar Zutra, but it's certainly a different version. and Rav Shmuel Bar Zucha in the second version, Masnei Hochi Kol Ha'ashonim Yofel Udyo V'Shemen Zayis Min HaMuvchar. Now if you notice, Kol HaShonim, the emphasis here is on Ashon. Ashon, we said, is that black on the outside of the glass which is scraped off and used to make the ink. And when you prepare this Ashon, the best way to do it is with Shemen Zayis. That's your first choice. So according to this second version, we don't really need it for the kneading as much as we need it for the second process, which is the creating of the Ashon. Om Rav Huna kol asrafim yafim lidyo usraf katof yafa minakulon. Now, what we're talking about is an admixture amongst the ingredients that they used to make the ink. They also added saraf. Saraf is an extract from a tree, and you can read about this online, by the way, if you Google ink manufacturing. And in English it's called a gum base, and it's again a certain kind of serum, or in Hebrew it's called a saraf, that is extracted from the trees. And amongst all the different sarafs, and there are many, many types, the best to use in order to make ink is a saraf that comes from kataf. And kataf, in the English translation, is called blackthorn gum. So next time we go out and we'll do a field trip to make ink, we'll look for this blackthorn gum. Om Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, Om Rav HaMadlik Ner Chanukah Tzarech Levarech. Now, we're about to embark upon the sugya of Birchas Ner Chanukah. Now, this sugya has two parts to it. One part is, which brachos should we recite when? And the other part of it is, do we actually justify a bracha on a mitzvah, derabbanan, a rabbinic mitzvah? HaMadlik Ner Shel Chanukah Tzarech Levarech Rabbi Yirmiya Omar. HaRoa Ner Shel Chanukah Tzarech Levarech. Not only does the Madlik make the bracha, but also the Roa makes the bracha. So Rashi is very confused here. What do you mean the Roa, someone who sees the Ner Chanukah? Why isn't he making that exact bracha on the Adlok itself? And Rashi says that we're talking about a case of a person who will not be able to light the Ner Chanukah. And it's fascinating. One of the examples Rashi gives is HaHolech B'Sfina. He's traveling on a ship. And from this we learn that a ship is not called a bias, and the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is Ner Yishu Beso. It's generated by a bias. He doesn't have a bias. He's on a ship. He doesn't have someone lighting for him in his house. And the best he can do in this case is, if he sees someone else's Ner Chanukah in a bias, maybe before the ship embarks, he can recite the bracha of Birchas HaRoeh. And exactly what the bracha of Birchas HaRoeh is, the Rishonim say, and we'll see it clearly as we go through the sugya, that is Sha'asa Nisim Lavosenu Bayomim Ahem Basman Hazeh. And the Rishonim point out that bracha, in addition to the first bracha, which is Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah, is a bracha which is on the Re'iyah. And some poskim therefore say that you should make the first bracha Lahadlik before you do the Adlaka. That's called over Lasiyos. And you should wait until after you light that candle, whichever it is. The first night is one, second night it's the first of the two. And after you finish that first candle, then you make the bracha of Shasa Nisan, because that bracha was established on Re'iyah, on seeing the Ner. And therefore, you should be Mavarech that bracha after you lit the first candle. Others say no, you should light both brachas before you light the first candle. And the reason for that is because although Rabbi Yirmi is talking about a Roeh who does not have the opportunity of lighting a candle, but someone who does have the opportunity of lighting a candle, he'll make that bracha Shasa Nisim on the Hadlok itself. Om Rabbi Yehuda, when does he make these brachas? Yom Rishon, on the first night of Chanukah, Roeh Mavarech Shtayim Umadlik Mivarech Sholosh. So if a person sees Ner Chanukah, he doesn't have the opportunity of lighting Ner Chanukah, he'll make two brachas on the first night. That's Shasa Nisim and Shechiyonu. If on the other hand he's lighting his own Ner Chanukah, he'll recite on the first night three brachos. He'll start with Asher Kitchonim Tzolos Tzvonu Lahadlik, And then he goes on to Shasan Nisim, and finally Shechionu. Mikan Vielech, from now on, after he finished the Shechionu on the first night, Madlik Mivarch Shtayim, the one who lights the candle will make the bracha on Nadloka plus the bracha Shasan Nisim, Varroa Mivarch Achas, the roa will only make the bracha Shasan Nisim. The Gemara says, Maima Mait. In other words, you're telling me that if somebody lights on the second night, he should drop one of the brachas. Which bracha should he drop out? We thought it was for sure Shechionu, but the Gemara wasn't sure about that. And the Gemara concludes, Mimait Zman. He should leave out Shechionu. And the Gemara argues, what do you mean? Why should he leave out Shechionu? V'nimait Nes. He should leave out Shasan Nisim. He's already recited Shasan Nisim to thank Hashem for this great miracle on the first night. Why should he repeat it on the second night? And to the same extent that you argue that Shigyonu Lazman Azeh, you've already recited that on the first night. I've already recited the bracha of Shasan Nisim on the first night. I've thanked Hashem for the miracle. And the Gemara answers, Nes Kol Yomei Isa. Although the mitzvah is the same mitzvah that extends over 8 days, but each night we thank Hashem for a different miracle, for the miracle of that particular night. So we can recite Shasan Nisim on the second night, etc., etc., because of that miracle of that night. But as far as Shechionu, Shechionu is on the first occasion to fulfill this mitzvah, and that's only on the first night. Obviously, if he didn't get an opportunity to light on the first night, then on the second night he will recite Shechionu, or whenever he gets his first opportunity to be mekayim this mitzvah. If, for example, he recited Shasan Nisim on the first night, but not Lahadlik, because he didn't have his own Adloka, then on the second night he will recite Shechionu according to most poskim on the first Adloka. May Mevarach, what's the Nusach HaBrocha? Mevarach Hashem Kitshonu Mitzvosu V'tzimonu Lahadlik Ner Shal Chanukah. We discussed this earlier today, that the mitzvah is not Hanocha, but rather Adloka. And we're thanking Hashem for commanding us in the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah V'Heichan Tzivonu, where I looked through the Torah and I didn't find any obligation to light Ner Chanukah. The whole institution of Ner Chanukah is rabbinic. So how can I say the Baruch Asher Kidshonu Mitzvosa V'Tzivonu? Where did God command me on this mitzvah? And here the Gemara offers two answers. First answer is Rav Avya, and his answer is Lo Sosur. The Torah tells us in Sefer Dvarim, Lo Tosu Mikol Asher Yerucha, which means that you're not allowed to deviate from the path and the authority of the Chachamim. And we'll see that Rav Nechemiah is not happy with this, because Lo Tosur is a lotase, and we have a rule of thumb, we don't recite a bracha on a lotase. And therefore, Ibn Chemya Omar, he comes up with another pasuk, and the pasuk says, Sha'al avicha v'yagedcha zekeinecha v'yomru lach. And it means to ask the elders. Now, what it means to ask the elders is to abide by their authority and their directive, v'yomru lach, and they'll tell you what to do. Once they tell you what to do, you have to listen to them. Therefore, when you fulfill a mitzvah derabanan, in effect you have already fulfilled a mitzvah deoraisa of sha'al avicha v'yagedcha. And the Rambam actually codifies this in his Yad HaChazak, his master work. And the Ramban goes a little bit ballistic here. What are you going to tell me, that every time I fulfill a mitzvah derabanan, I fulfill a mitzvah doraisa? I mean, if that be the case, then we don't understand the difference between a doraisa and a derabanan. The halacha, for example, differentiates in the case of safek. We have a principle called safek doraisa lechumra. If I don't know and it's a doraisa, it's a Torah law, I have to do it. But in a safek derabanan, I can do without it. But that doesn't make sense, because now you're telling me that every mitzvah derabanan is in effect a mitzvah doraisa. So bottom line, Asher Kidshonu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu. And what's v'tzivanu? V'tzivanu includes not just a mitzvah doraisa that's in the Bible, but v'tzivanu means that God commanded us to listen to the Chachamim as well. The Baal Halachas Gedolos, based on this Gemara that we're learning, when he has a counting of 613, he includes even derabbanans. There are seven mitzvahs derabbanan that are included in the Taryag mitzvahs according to the Baha'i. Masiv Rav Amram. Rav Amram asked the following question from a Mishnah. The Mishnah says that Mai, which is a Chiyuv Maser Midrabbanon, Ma'arvim Bo, Umishtatvim Bo, Mvorchim Olav, Mizamnin Olav. You're allowed to use Dmai for what's called an Erev Chatzeros, or you're allowed to do a Shituf Muvos. Again, for this we'd have to go into detail in Masechta Erevin, which we will leave out for now, because what's most germane for us is the last statement that says Umivarchin Olav, Umizamnin Olav, that we make a bracha if we eat Dmai, and if somebody eats Dmai, he could be part of a Zimun. Which is really interesting, because he has violated an Isud Rabbanon of Achilas Tmai. The Rabbanon said that you're not allowed to eat this fruit or these grains before you mafresh Maser. And yet, nevertheless, he's considered part of the Zimun. As if to say, he's Chayiv in Birkas HaMazon if he made a meal out of Tmai, which is very fascinating unto itself. U'mafreshin also Arum u'bein Hashmoshos. And he's allowed to take off Dmai if he's not wearing his clothes. And even right before Shabbos. Okay, that has to do with the laws of Shabbos, which maybe we'll get a chance to discuss, but what we want to put the emphasis on is that he's being mafresh without his clothes on. Iyamit called midrabbanon boy broch. If you're going to tell me, as we assume, that any mitzvah derabbanon requires a bracha, and therefore Dmai, which is a mitzvah derabbanon to be mafresh maser min Dmai, how can he do it naked? Hacha ki koi arum. In this particular situation, when he's naked, is hechi mevarchi possibly? Could he make a bracha? Vabeinon, we have a rule, vahoya machanecha kadosh, that your camp has to be holy, which means that you're not allowed to recite any dovah shebekedusha, any bracha, any tefillah in front of nakedness. Veleka, we don't have a kadosh situation over here. Amar Abai says that Dmai is different. Why? Because when the Rabbanon require bracha, that's only Vadai Divrei Bari Bracha. If you have an absolute definite Chiyu, for example, Ner Chanukah or Megillah or any mitzvah the Rabbanon that you're definite about, then you have to make a bracha. But Safik Divrei Lo Bari Bracha, when the Rabbanon instituted Dmai, and this is a long discussion about the nature of Dmai. Dmai is not a chiyuv vada. It's not like any other mitzvah derabbanon. It's the Rabbanon are saying, you know what? Be mafresh Dmai just in case. So the Gemara says, Vayom tov sheni the suffik to the vreim uboi bracha. You're telling me that whenever I'm obligated only in a suffik, I drop the bracha. What about the second night of Pesach in Chutz Laretz? We make a bracha on the matzah, on the maror, etc., etc., even though it's only a suffik. The whole institution of Yom Tov Sheni is based on a suffik originally, because they didn't know exactly which day was Yom Tov out in the outlying areas in Chutz Laretz. So the Gemara answers, Hasam ki hechi delo lezulzuli pe. And if you read this Gemara on a simple level, the Gemara is saying that a bracha could be instituted by the Rabbanon as a tool, as a method for a certain agenda. In this case, the agenda is to make sure that people will take Yom Tov Sheni seriously. Unfortunately, today we know what this has led to in certain movements, if you want to call them, denominations, they call them, and they're trying to do away with Yom Tov Sheni and Chutz Laretz for Chas V'Shalom, and we don't want any zilzul. Zilzul, the word zilzul means when you have a laid-back attitude, and we're afraid that if we omit the bracha, people are going to think it's nothing. We don't need this whole matzah, morah business on the second night of Pesach, etc., etc., because, after all, we don't even make a bracha on it. So according to Abai's approach, they instituted a bracha and a suffik to the frame in order to make sure that everyone knew how severe and how serious this obligation is. Rava Amar, Rava has a different explanation as to why there's no bracha on Dmai. And he's going to explain it in a way that the whole kasher from Yom Tov Sheni falls off. And that is that Rov HaMe'aretz Ma'asrin Heim. That in truth, we can assume, because the case of Dmai is where we bought fruits from the shuk, from the market, and we don't know the person who sold this, whether he did take off Masa, he didn't take off Masa, so the Rabbanon required taking off Masa. But, says Rav, even on a Rabbanon level, it's not a situation of Safek, but rather, it's a Rov. Rov Ami'oretz Ma'asrim Heim, and therefore, the Rabbanon is saying that we can rely on most of the people that they did take off maaser, we have a separate stringency, because maybe he didn't take off maaser, but therefore it doesn't get a bracha. It's not even a suffix. It's really only that the chacham say worry about the mute. Okay, now we get into a sugya called chashad, chet shin dalet, which means what we call in our term, but again, there's a loose analogy, it's called maris ayin, that people might suspect you of non-fulfillment of the mitzvah. Omar afuna chotzer sheyesh lo shnei psachim. So you have a chotzer, and it has two different openings. In other words, you have a window on one side that faces one street, another on the other side. Tzricha shtei neros. You're going to have to light on both sides. Omar Rava, when does this apply, says Rava? Lo amar, it doesn't apply. Ela b'shtei ruchos. That if person goes down this side, because the house is situated on two different streets, you know, one side of his house opens up to one street, the other to the other, is therefore, if somebody goes down one side, he doesn't know whether you lit candles or not, because little does he know that you have a window on the other side, or vice versa. Avol miruach achas. But let's say, for example, on one side, he has two windows, or two openings. So then the assumption is, says Rava, that somebody going down the street will know that he's going to light on the other Pesach, either going this way or that way. My timer. The Gemara explains Rava's logic. If this whole institution is because of chashad, which means that people might suspect him that he didn't light near Chanukah, is chashad a demand? Who are the people that we're worried about? Who is this population? Where are they coming from? If they're coming from another city, like people are coming in from outside, and they're going to suspect you, is afil beruach achas nami liboy. It's only the local yokels, the people who live here locally, they know that you have two different doors on one side. But if we're worried about people from the outside, is then they won't know that you have two doors. So even though those two doors are on one side of the street, if let's say they only see a candle in one window, they don't know that you have another, right? If they don't see a candle in one window, they don't know that you have a candle in another window. But the Gemara thinks that if it's the Bnei Masa, the people who live locally, and that's who you're worried about, is afilu mishnei ruchos nami loli boy. Even if the house is situated on two different streets, they're local people, so they know that you have another side and a window that faces, a door that faces there. They'll assume that you did it. So the Gemara says, no, that's not really true. Even if we're only suspicious of those people who live locally, but zimnin, in certain occasions, they walk by, behai, on this side of the street, velo chalfi behai, and they're not going to make a circle around the other side of the street, the amri, they may come to a conclusion, unfortunately they'll say, ki hechi de behai pitkola pischalo adlik, just like I don't see any candle here on this side, is behai pischalo on the other side, nami lo, he didn't light on the other side. And therefore, we require him to light on both sides, and that's called chashoda. Here we have a tremendous machlokas rishonim and poskim about whether you make a bracha on chashada. According to the Prima Gadim, for example, you have to make a bracha on one side and have in mind the other side. But if, let's say, you didn't have in mind the other side, you'd have to make a bracha on the other side. The Ritva already, way before the Prima Gadim, rejects this opinion. He says chashada is a lotaseh, right? That the Torah says, don't put yourself in a situation which lends itself to suspicion, but it's not a mitzaseh, you would not make a bracha. What is the source in halacha for this concept of Rav Huna of chashad? The sanya we learned in a brisa, Amra b'Shimon, b'shvil arba dvarim Amra Torah laniach peya b'sof sadeh. The four different reasons why peya should be left at the end of the field. In other words, first he does the harvest in the entire field. When he gets to the last corner, that's where he should leave peya. According to the strict law d'oraisa, he can leave peah anywhere in the field, at the beginning of the field, in the middle of the field. But the Chazal, for four different reasons, wanted him to leave his peah at the end of the field in the final corner. Number one is mipnei gezel aniyim. We can just read the four, and then the Gemara is going to go into detail to analyze all four, each one separately. Gezel aniyim, we're worried about stealing from the poor people. Number two, mipnei bitul aniyim. you're going to cause the aniyim bittel. They'll have to spend too much time trying to find where the pay is, mitnei chashad, because of suspicion, and that's the one that's going to be most relevant to our discussion about Ner Chanukah. Umishum bal techale, and because of the isur lav, the Torah says that you're not allowed to cut off all the harvest from your field. If you leave absolutely nothing in the field and there's no mitzvah payah, not only did you violate a mitzvah saseh, a positive command, you also violate a lotasa called bal techala. And now the Gemara analyzes each one of these four categories. Number one, mipnei gezel anim. Why are we stealing from the poor people? Shelo yira balabayis shah pnuya v'yoma lekrovo ani harezu payah. Right, during the course of his harvest, what he's going to do is he's going to call in the Baal Bayis who's doing his harvest. He's going to call in his best buddy or his relative, and he's going to say to him, "You know what? I'm right now going to declare that this is payah. Come in and take the payah." Now, payah is a mitzvah that allows all the aniyim to have an equal shot at collecting the payah. And therefore, if we tell him that he has to wait until he finishes the entire harvest, then at that point, everybody knows, it's public knowledge, that he's about to set up payah. And all the aniyim will be there to grab the bag, to grab the payah. Now we turn to Daf Chav Gimel, Amud Beis. Umipnei bitl aniyim. What are we worried about here? Shalo yu aniyim yoshvim umishamrim. If he can theoretically be mafresh payah anywhere in his field, then the aniyim are going to have to be on tension, on call, 24/7, from the beginning until the end. Because maybe he's going to be mafresh payah now. Aksha, but now that we've established Meniyat Balabai, because the aniyim are going to say, Aksha, maybe now, this moment, the Balabais is going to be mafresh the payah. I better be there, you know, to get my shot at it. But if we know that it's at the end, then take it easy. You don't have to be there. He's not being mafresh payah. You have plenty of time till he finishes the harvest of his field. Mivnei chashad, where is there a problem of suspicion? Shalo yu ovrim v'shovim omrim. People who pass by the field, they're going to think tovo me'era. Let this be a curse. Le'adam for a person shalo niyach peah b'sadeu. He hasn't been mafresh peah. You see, if he was mafresh at the beginning of his harvest or in the middle of his harvest, they don't know that. They see him coming by at the end of his harvest and he's not leaving payah. They don't realize that he's a good guy and he left payah in the beginning of the field. So we made an established requirement that he should be mafresh payah at the end of his field. And therefore, everybody will know when he's mafresh payah. And nobody will suspect him that he wasn't mafresh payah. His hafrosh will be public in nature. Umishum bal techala. And by requiring that at the end of his harvest he leave that last corner as payah, certainly he will not violate bal techala. So the Gemara asks the fine question, Otu kul lav mishum bal techala ninu? Basically, all the reasoning that we gave is because of bal techala. So let's explain this last fourth of the list of four. Amar Rava mipnei haramoyim. They were talking about those who try to cheat. And again, they're going to tell you, well, we gave payah earlier, and so forth and so on. We're going to be able to undo their possible ramos by establishing that at the end of the field, they have to be mafresh. They have to be mafresh payah. They can't claim, well, we left payah somewhere earlier in the field. Om Rav Yitzchak Bar, Redifa Marav Huna, Ner Sheyesh Lo Shnei Pios. What happens if you have a larger container receptacle with oil in it and you put in two different wicks? Can two different people fulfill their obligation with the same ner but two different wicks? In other words, what defines the ner Chanukah? Is the container and here there's only one container? Or is it the wick and here we have two wicks in one container? Says Rav Yitzchak, Ola l'shnei b'nei adam. Reuven can light this wick, Shimon that wick, and even though they're both drawing from the same receptacle, they're both yotze. Says Rava, Omar Rava, Mile Ka'ara Shemen V'Kifa Psilos. Rava wants to add a condition here. He gives you a very dramatic case. He's got a bowl that's full of oil, and he's got many, many different wicks in it. And there is a possibility that if you do the following, again, he's going to stipulate a condition, then many different people could have multiple adlokas from one there. How is that so? Kafal of kli. what he has to do is he has to get a covering, let's say a round covering, that has holes on top of it, and the wicks come out of each of the holes. And then, Ola Lakama Bnei Adam, then each wick could be considered a separate ner. But Lo Kafal of Kli, however, if you have two wicks, and how much more so if there are many, many wicks, and you put them all in one bowl, but there's no covering over the bowl, then Asa Kamin Midura, then it becomes like one large entity. And afili achas ena nami ena ola. Even for one person, you don't fulfill the mitzvah. In other words, it's critical that the wick be a separate wick. And if you have many wicks in one bowl, then the flames will eventually connect to each other and they form like a bonfire. That's not Ner Chanukah. Ner Chanukah requires, and this is in contradistinction to Ner Avdolah, it requires every single wick be separate, every flame be separate. And how do you separate the different wicks and the different flames in a case where you have only one container? The answer is kofa olav esakli. He has to put a cover over it, and the various wicks will come out of the different holes. Now, we're about to embark upon a major sugya here, and that is the sugya of what's called adifus. Adifus means setting up a system of priority. So we're talking about a person who has limited funds, and this is what we call triage. Omar Rava Pshitali, I have no doubt, Ner Beso V'Ner Chanukah, Ner Beso Odf. He has only enough money for on Friday night of Chanukah for one candle. Which candle should he light? Should he light a Shabbos candle, which is called Ner Beso? Should he light a Chanukah candle? You and I would have said for sure, Ner Chanukah comes first. It's so rare, and it's a great mitzvah. Pirsum Anes, name. What comes first? Ner Beso comes first. Why? Mishum Shalom Bayis. This is the concept of Shalom Bayis, creating a peaceful home. Domestic harmony, they call it today. And that's critical. That's why the Chafetz Chaim Zichron Levrach, even though he's very makbid on this man in Ner Chanukah, would wait until his wife came home. I think I mentioned it to you once. Even though he waited hours till she could get home, that's because he wouldn't want to underline Shalom Bayis for the sake of Ner Chanukah. Ner Beis over Kiddush Hayom. Now he can buy wine with the money that he has, or he could buy Ner Shabbos. Once again, Ner Beso Adif Mishum Shalom Beso. And Shalom Bayis takes preference. And the Rishonim point out over here that he was Yotze his mitzvah of Kiddush Doraisa Zochas Yom Shas Kacho during Tefillah. Now the Rabbanan instituted a mitzvah a Yayin, a kosher Yayin when he comes home. And that mitzvah is inferior to the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos because of Shalom Bayis. Boy Rava. But Rava says, here's where I get into a quandary. Ner Chanukah V'Kiddush Hayom. Whatever, he has only enough money on the night of Shabbos Chanukah for either a Ner Chanukah or for wine for Kiddush. He doesn't have enough money for both. Mahu. And here, Rava vacillates. Kiddush Hayom Adif T'Tadir. Kiddush Hayom is something that applies every single Shabbos of the year. So that you end up with 52 verses 8. And that's called Tadir. Tadir is something that's constant and repeats itself. That gets preference. Oh, Dilma, should we say no? Ner Chanukah Adif. Why is Ner Chanukah greater? Because Mishum Pirsume Nisa. That publicizing the miracle trumps the halach of Tadir. Basadi Boile Hada Pshit Pashta. After he asked this question, he came to a final conclusion. How is that? Ner Chanukah Adif Mishum Pirsume Nisa. That will give preference and priority to Ner Chanukah because of the element of Pirsum Anes. And the Rishonim point out, it's very strange over here, the Gemara, Rava doesn't bring any proof. Usually, Hadar Pashte means that Rava found some sort of a Brisa or a Mishnah, or another statement of an Amora, an early Amora. Here, it seems that Rava came up with his own logical conclusion, and we accept this lahalacha, that you may have to forfeit the mitzvah of Kiddush al Yayin for the sake of Ner Chanukah, because Ner Chanukah has an element that's very unique and very significant called Persumenis. My Rebbe, again, this is for a long discussion now, and I'm just mentioning it in passing. My Rebbe used to say that he believes that the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah Persumanes is Kiddush Hashem. And with regard to Kiddush Hashem, it seems that you have to give even the shirt off your back for the sake of Kiddush Hashem and to avoid Chil Hashem. Omar Afuna, now we get into an agadic statement about the greatness of being careful about the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, Ner Shabbos, any mitzvah that applies to a Ner. Haragil b'ner, if a person's very meticulous about a mitzvah of a Ner, whether it be the Shabbos candles, the Chanukah candles, is the reward for that is Havin Leh, he will have Bonim Talmidei Chachamim, sons who are Torah scholars. And this has to do with the light of Torah. Hazor b'mezuzah, what's the reward for someone who's careful about the mitzvah of mezuzah? Is Zocha L'dira Nah, he'll have a beautiful house. And once again, we have here a long discussion about what that means. So we're actually talking about, you know, a gorgeous apartment, you know, in Katamon. What are we talking about? Some say it means more of a spiritually beautiful house. Hazar b'tzitzis, Zocha L'talis Nah, if he's careful about the mitzvah of tzitzis. Now here you have machlokas. Some say careful about mitzvah tzitzis means he already has a garment that's four-cornered and he's obligated to the mitzvah and he's very careful about the mitzvah. Others say that he takes upon himself to buy a garment that has four, even though strictly according to the law, if you don't have a garment of four corners, you're not obligated to tzitzis, but he goes out of his way to deliberately put himself into a situation where he'll be obligated. And he'll be zochet to a talis nah. Again, once again, talis nah might have to do with the Gan Eden in the next world. Hazor b'kiddush hayom, someone who's careful about the mitzvah of kiddush, zochet mamala garbe yayin. So we're not talking about kiddush d'oraisa, which is again zochet yamakash, that he fulfills without a cup of wine. We're talking about the rabbinic mitzvah of making kiddush al yayin, and he'll be zochet to have many, many kegs of wine. Rav Hunavi Rogil Davi Cholif Itani Apischa to Rabbi Ovin Nagra. So Rav Huna used to very often pass by the doorway of Rabbi Ovin. Chaz, and he noticed Davi Rogil Bishroge Tuva, that he would light many, many lights for the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos, and maybe even for the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. Now, this has to do with Mahajan and Mahajan Mina Mahajan, because he would add candles to cover not only the days as they came in, but also the number of people in his household. Omar, and when Rav Huna became aware of this meticulous behavior of Rabbi Ovin with regard to Ner, he declared, Trei Gavri Rav Rave, two greats, Nafke Mehocha, will come from this household. And the Gemara says that that actually came to fruition. Nafke Binayu, from this Rabbi Ovin, came two of the great scholars, and that is Rav Idi Bar Ovin and Rav Chia Bar Ovin. So these are the two greats that came, because we said that a person is careful about Ner, then he'll have sons who are Talmidei Chachamim. It's a whole discussion here about a woman who's childless, never a childless couple. Would this kind of zehirus in Ner be enough to bring about a situation where she'll Mirtz Hashem bear children, or it's only if she has children and she's capable of having children, then she'll have male children and she'll have scholars as sons. Rav Chizdavi Rogil Davi Cholif Etoni Apischa Debei Nasa De Rav Shizbi. So Rav Chizda would pass by the doorway of Rav Shizdi's father's house, and Chazadavi Rogil Bishragi Tuva, he realized that Rav Shizbi and his parents were very careful about these lights. Omer Gavra Rabba Nofik Mihocha. And it's a whole discussion here about why in this case there was only one Gavra Rabba, whereas in the previous case we said there would be two, but Nofik Minambi Rav Shizbi. So the father of Shizbi was so careful about the mitzvahs of Ner Shabbos and Ner Chanukah, and therefore he was zocha to have a son by the name of Rav Shizbi, one of the all-time greats. The Besu de Rav Yosef Hava Ma'achra U'madlekes La. Very strange here. The Gemara on the simple level tells us a story about Rav Yosef's wife, that she was very late in lighting the Shabbos candles, as if to say she did it right before nightfall. And we're not sure exactly why she would have done so. If we have a time, I'll offer one interpretation. Amalei Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef says to her, Tanya, we have a brisa, and based on this brisa, you're gonna derive the conclusion that you should light Shabbos candles a little bit earlier. Don't wait till the last minute. Because there were two pillars that would protect the Jewish people during the 40 years in the Midbar. One was the Amud HaAnan, the pillar of glory, and the other was Amud HaEsh, the pillar of fire. And the pasuk says, "Lo yomish amud ha'anan yomav amud ha'esh laila," which means that the amud ha'esh would come a little bit before the amud ha'anan would finish. So they were mashlim one or the other, which we call in English an overlap. Milame, this teaches, says the Brisa, "Amud ha'anan mashlim li'amud ha'esh, v'amud ha'esh mashlim li'amud ha'anan." So it means at night, the Amud Ha'anan was still, before nightfall, was still powerful, but the Amud Ha'esh already started functioning. And going into the morning, even before the Amud Ha'esh would check out, the Amud Ha'anan would start functioning. It's therefore, you see, that don't wait for the fire till it's nighttime. Already, even when it's daytime, when it's still the jurisdiction of the Amud Ha'anan, which was had the daytime jurisdiction, already you should be lighting the Amud Ha'esh, which means the Shabbos candle. And Savra Lak Duma, so she figured after Rav Yosef gave her this whole discussion and taught her from this price, so therefore she wanted to make it very early. Omalei Lahu Saba, and a certain scholar told her, and Tosus says that when it says Ahu Saba in Shas, it's really a reference to Eliyahu Navi, and he told her Tnina. We have another part of that same brisa that says Ubulvad Shelo Yakdim V'Shelo Yacher. In other words, you it's true that the one comes before the other, the Amud Ha'esh before the Amud Ha'anan, and so forth and so on, but not too early. And finally, she got it perfectly right, and now I could perhaps share with you very quickly why it was that she was late in lighting her in Neros, because she felt that there's a mitzvah called Tosefes Shabbos. And the mitzvah Tosefes Shabbos, she thought, would require that the person accept upon himself Shabbos and then light the Ner Shabbos. But in truth, Ner Shabbos itself initiates the Kabbalah of Tosefes Shabbos. Okay, I'm sorry if I was very quick, but I just want to finish up the daf. And it's getting very late. Omar Rava, Derachim, Derachim Rabbanan. Rabbanan are beloved. Somebody who finds the Rabbanan beloved. Havalei Banim Rabbanan. He himself will therefore have sons who will Tamidi Chacham. Demoke Rabbanan. Those who respect the rabbis. Havalei Hasnavasa Rabbanan. Hasnavasa means. Sons-in-law, the dachil rabbanan, those who are afraid, in others they have a certain awe and respect for the rabbis, is hu gufe havi tzur mirabbanan. He himself will become a Torah scholar. V'im lav bar hachihu. But what if he's not capable? He just doesn't have the ability and the capacity to become such talmid chacham. Is mishtaman mile b'tzur mirabbanan. At least he will be able to be very intelligent, he'll have a great wisdom and guidance, he'll be able to guide people, people would take him very seriously, they'll be impacted by his words and his guidance, and they will treat him almost like you would treat a Torah scholar. So let's just see where we're up to now as we finish for this morning. We're up to what's called Shemen Sreifa, which is approximately 9 lines up from the bottom of Chav Gimel, Amid Beis. And this is going to lead us to the Sugyan Chav Dalid, which is a very, very profound sugya.